Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks so much for listening. It is The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. The Royals are bringing back Alcides Escobar. Manager of the Royals, Mike Matheny, was asked why. Here was his answer.
What we're talking about right here is depth and trying to figure out ways to protect ourselves on a very unique position, which is playing the middle of the infield. And guys who've done that with success, there's some things that they do that give us comfort, knowing that if we get into a bind and we need help, that they can figure out ways to help us in the middle. That's what it's going to be more than anything else right now. And you always take those intangibles as far as past success and their contributions to winning teams. You never take those for granted.
Rob, am I the only one that read this? And maybe you guys did, 913-576-7610. That maybe Alberto Mondesi isn't coming back as quickly as we thought. Just based on the last time we had an update on Alberto Mondesi, it came off like he was going to be here in the next 14 days. At some point in the month of May, we'd start to see Alberto Mondesi return. For them to bring back Alcides Escobar, am I reading too much into this? Do we think it has anything to do? Like, I don't think this is a Nicky Lopez move. Nicky Lopez has been good for this team. He plays shortstop for this organization. Am I wrong in thinking that maybe this means that Mondesi isn't coming back as soon as we had anticipated?
I'm worried that you're right, because on paper, the Escobar moves makes no sense to me. Just none. Because you have a shortstop at the major league level playing well, Nicky Lopez. You feasibly have your shortstop of the future, or at least a guy you believe is a shortstop of the future, because he was batting third in spring training, in Adalberto Mondesi, who you think is going to come back soon, or at least sometime in May. And then in the minors, you have the phenom every fan loves, Bobby Witt Jr., shortstop. And if you're looking for just a guy, a body, a person, they added last year Lucius Fox, who, when he's not helping Batman, plays shortstop for this team in the minor leagues. So on the surface, I don't understand the Escobar move at all. And frankly, if the Escobar move is anything more than just veteran leadership at AAA, if they believe he can actually help this club, I'd be stunned. I don't think Escobar has anything left. I know, like, the nostalgia and da-da-da-da, but there's just no way he's got anything left.
Why are you hating on Alcides Escobar when the last time we saw him when he was in Japan, he was raking? What, he hit 280?
Raking.
Had an on-base percentage of 350? Hit for a little pop. You know he can play a good glove, and he's never injured. You're telling me you saw what he did last year overseas and you came away with the conclusion he ain't got nothing left in the tank to give this team? He ain't got some – he doesn't have some off-the-bench production. He doesn't have some veteran leadership he can impart with these young guys. You're telling me you think Alcides Escobar's tank is on E.
His tank is on E. You know how many guys rake in Japan? A lot. Remember the name Frank Schwindel? You probably don't, because
I do remember Frank Schwindel.
I mean, okay, you do. But like, average Royals fan, Frank Schwindel, what's that name mean? Absolutely nothing. He had a nice Japanese career. He couldn't hit in the major league level. Alcides Escobar hasn't played major league baseball since 2018. And in 2018, he hit a paltry 231, and at least his OBP was red hot at 279. The tank's on E. He is veteran leadership. You know what he is? Remember when they brought Raul Ibanez in 2014 and he was like the give the speech guy but took up a roster spot?
Don't you dare disrespect Raul Ibanez, who might have been the catalyst for that 14 team. 913-576-7610. Maybe Escobar was signed to help prep Bobby Witt Jr. Bobby Witt's in AA and Alcides Escobar is in AAA. Like, there's a legitimate chance that Escobar is on the major league roster before Bobby Witt Jr. There's a chance that Bobby Witt Jr. never goes to AAA. that they just call him up straight from Double A because he's playing at such a high level. So I don't think that's what Alcides Escobar's purpose is. If anything, they're just so different kind of players. That would just be a really bad mentor for them. Like, their styles don't seem to be very similar to me. That's no knock against Alcides Escobar, but we all watched Alcides Escobar. We've heard enough about Bobby Wood Jr. to know that that guy probably isn't the one to be giving you the advice of how to handle your transition to the major leagues. So maybe I'm wrong in thinking this, but when I heard the Alcides Escobar news today, I thought that meant something for Adalberto Mondesi, that Mondesi wasn't going to be ready when we thought he was going to be ready. So earlier today, someone called in to Fesco in the Morning, and their text on Fesco in the Morning said, quote, "Starting to feel the Royals are more 2003 than 13 and 14, and the question was asked, where's your confidence level in the first place Royals? This is what we have to do. We have to put the 14 Royals in a very different conversation because of how the story ended. I sort of feel the further and further away we get from 2014, we sort of remove the context of the season, because the 14 Royals weren't the 14 Royals until like September 5th is when they became the 2014 Kansas City Royals. Before that, this team was playing better than the 14 Royals. Now, you guys don't remember that, when the Royals were a 500 baseball team around the All-Star break, when the Royals needed Raul Ibanez to tell them that they needed to play with more confidence or remind them of who they were? You don't remember when Ned went on the radio and said that you guys weren't going to the games and how disappointed he was? You guys remember that about 14? Like, all that stuff happened in 14. So let's compare them to the 13 team. I think that's more fair and appropriate. I don't think that they're the 13 Royals, or excuse me, the 03 Royals. The 03 Royals, all of us knew, were fluky. If you guys remember that team, we all knew that that team was fluky. So let's play a game real quick, Rob. A very simple game. We don't need any music for this game. I'm going to read you guys the roster for the 03. So their starting lineup. And you guys are going to tell me that this team feels like the 2003 Kansas City Royals. All right? So I'm going to pull up the Royals roster from 13, and I'm going to pull up the Royals roster from 03 and tell me which one does this one seem more comparable to. In 03, catcher, Brett Main. First base, Ken Harvey. Second base, Desi Relaford. Shortstop, Angel Baroa. Third base, Joe Randa. In the outfield, Raul Ibanez, Carlos Beltran, Aaron Guile, and at DH, Mike Sweeney. After that, their first five guys off the bench were Michael Tucker, Carlos Fabelis, Mike DeFelice, D. Brown, and Mindy Lopez. That was their roster in 2003. And no disrespect to the 03 Royals, because I love the 03 Royals. That team is not very good. In 13, it was Perez, Hosmer, Getz, Escobar, Moose, Gordon, Kane, David Lowe, Billy Butler. Their top five guys coming off the bench were Dyson Francoeur, Emilio Bonifacio, Elliot Johnson, and Miguel Tejada was on the 13 Royals, which is wild. You guys know this year's team. I don't got to read all three of them. Does this year's roster feel more like the talent that was on the 13 team, or the talent that was on the 03 team, where Mike McDougal went to the All-Star game, whose rotation was Offelt May, Chris George, Jose Lima, and DJ Carrasco? Let's not disrespect this year's club and call them the 03 team. Can we stop it? Calm down. I know that Royals fans are naturally pessimistic people, but let's calm down here. This team is not the 2003 Royals that we all knew was pyrite. We all knew was a wobbly three-legged chair that eventually was going to fall. They finished over 500. Salute to them. But let's not disrespect this year's team. Coming up on the other side, I think we are going to see the third wave of free agency. I'll tell you why. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
Drive 610 Sports Radio. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to try something new called hashtag Ask Vern. There are Royals questions that you have that maybe you don't feel get answered on this radio station. So we'll give you the opportunity to ask Vern a question, 913-576-7610, in a non-post-game setting. There's a lot of things happening with this team right now. They are in first place in their division, so we'll do hashtag Ask Vern coming up in just a bit. So if you got a Royals question and you want to ask our Royals insider, be sure to put it in the text line, 913-576-7610. Let's talk some football before Vern hops on with us. So yesterday became the end of the compensatory pick formula. So to give you guys an understanding, whenever Kendall Fuller was a free agent after Kansas City, when he then signs with Washington, Kansas City then gets a draft pick for losing a free agent. So that time is ended. So if you want to sign a free agent right now, there's no compensatory pick that goes to any of your opposition in the NFL. So some of the names that are out there, Richard Sherman, future Hall of Fame corner, Justin Houston, Russell Okung is still on the board, Melvin Ingram, Jason McCourty, KJ Wright. There's still some big time names who can come in and help this roster and help this team. This is what I think the Chiefs are going to do to address the rest of the needs that are on their roster. I still look at cornerback as being a need for the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think it's a glaring need. If it was, I think they would have addressed it in free agency, or excuse me, addressed it in the draft, because they've done a really good job at finding that value in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round for a player that can come in and contribute. They didn't take that swing. This offseason, the Chiefs have taken a swing at virtually every position on the field, aside from corner. I mean, they got a wide receiver. They got a tight end. They picked up a running back in Jerick McKinnon. I mean, they've invested resources everywhere else on this roster aside from corner. I think their cornerback depth is a little bit thin. I also think that they're really young at the position. So if you want to find a veteran corner, if you don't want to give another team any added fuel or any weapons, now's the perfect time to do it. I think we're going to start seeing that run here. Alejandro Villanueva, you remember, he was rumored to go to Baltimore prior to the NFL draft. They then wait after the draft, and then the moment that a draft pick isn't attached to him, so Pittsburgh doesn't get to benefit from Baltimore acquiring Alejandro Villanueva, they sign him to a 2-year, $14 million deal with $8 million of it guaranteed. I think over the next week, we're going to start to see that third wave of free agency. Sherman's going to sign somewhere. Houston's going to sign somewhere. Okung's going to end up signing somewhere. Melvin Ingram's going to end up signing somewhere. Maybe those players are waiting for closer to training camp, and that's when they think their leverage is going to be the same. But at this point, your leverage, or I think what your market is the same now as it's going to be in August, unless a significant injury happens, which is always possible. But if you're Justin Houston, you want to lock yourself into a team, get yourself some guaranteed money, now as rosters have shaken out, I think now's the perfect time to do it. I think now is the perfect time to end up signing with the team and moving forward and seeing what you can do. Coming up in a little bit, we'll catch up with Josh Vernier. Vernier's going to answer your Royals question, hashtag Hey Vern. So we'll ask him about Daniel Lynch making his start, what he thinks the Alcides Escobar moves for the team. But a majority of it is going to be your question. So if you got a question, 913-576-7610, you want to be sure to have Josh Vernier answer your questions. Before we do that, so earlier today we heard Skip Bayless sing the praises of the Chiefs draft.
It pains me to admit this, but I loved the Kansas City Chiefs draft. And I'll give you Orlando Brown on top of that. Because he is really good.
He is.
And so is Nick Bolton, who they took with their next pick, the first pick of the draft night, Nick Bolton out of Missouri, second round. He will impose his will on other teams. And they needed that kind of attitude and edge on defense. Mm-hmm. Because every time I watched him, sometimes against my Vanderbilt Commodores, he just wreaked havoc. Mm-hmm. Because when he hits you, you just stay hit. You stay down. And so I love that pick in the second round, 26th pick in the second round. But I love this one more. I know Creed Humphrey because I'm a University of Oklahoma fan. I know Orlando Brown real well because I'm an Oklahoma fan. Creed Humphrey started when he was a freshman. He was a state wrestling champ, and he just took over the offensive line as a freshman. And I have no idea why his stock fell.
I love those guys, Skip.
People just talk themselves out of it for whatever reason. He's just a football player. He just knows how to control the middle of the line of scrimmage. And he had it right away as a freshman. He just jumped in with all those stud juniors and seniors and took the line over.
Right.
Well, trust me, he's going to be Patrick Mahomes' best friend because he's going to be the signal caller of that unit. He's very smart. I couldn't believe he was sitting there and that they took him because that is a huge upgrade.
So that was Skip Bayless on his show on on FS1, Undisputed. Rob, you know how hard it is to put together an offseason that both Skip Bayless and Colin Cowherd love? I mean, that's a hard thing to do. We got to complete the Holy Trinity here and hear what Stephen A. Smith has to think about the Chiefs draft. I think the Chiefs came away with just about everything they needed this offseason. Sure, I'd love for them to have spent a little better resource on wide receiver. You know how I feel about corner. But you got a linebacker people feel like can come in from day one. You got an offensive lineman who I think can start from this team on day one. You got some athleticism and some physicality. And the thing that I liked hearing most was toughness. I don't think this offensive line was tough enough last year. I don't feel like they moved teams and players off the point of attack. I don't feel like they really dictated tempo of the game with their offensive line. The only game I can really think of that they did it last year was Buffalo. I guess you can incorporate the Houston game in that as well, where I thought they just, from a line of scrimmage standpoint, dominated the opposition. It didn't happen too often last year. I think with this offensive line, you're going to be able to do that. I think with this offensive line, you're going to be able to set the tone and tempo, and you're going to be able to physically impose your will on the opposition in a way that they could not do all of last year. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. Coming up, hashtag Hey Vern, if you got a Royals question, 913-576-7610, we'll learn about Daniel Lynch's first start. What does Alcides Escobar's signing mean for Adalberto Mondesi? But a lot of it's going to be your questions. That's next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6. This is where Danny Duffy plays.
I was expecting more to the sentence. I was expecting a little bit. This is where Danny Duffy plays. Okay, my bad. I had no clue. Rob, I have a question to ask you after we get done talking baseball with Vern that just popped in my head, and I don't think anyone wants to admit it, but We'll talk about it anyway. I am very excited about our next guest hopping on. He is our Royals insider. I'm so happy he has to work this Friday. That's all I really care about. Josh Vernier joins us on the show. Hey, Vern.
Is this where Tyler Zuber plays as well?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a here on. It was like, here's
right,
where.
Here's,
I was
yeah,
like.
Here's oh. C-Dot or something.
Yeah, I was like, okay, all right.
It's true. Yeah, Duffy's going to pitch here on Thursday.
Congrats, Danny Duffy. I didn't know that you played here. That's actually pretty awesome. So we're going to allow you guys the opportunity to ask Vern questions. Text line 913-576-7610, hashtag Hey Vern, and we'll ask your questions to Josh Vernier. Before we get to people's questions, what did you make of Daniel Lynch's debut yesterday?
I thought his final line was indicative of the stuff that he had. 4 2/3 innings, 3 earned runs, a lot of great defensive plays behind him. You could say Whit Merrifield's inability to make a good throw to Carlos Santana cost him a pair of runs, cost him the ability to finish off that 5th inning. The slider wasn't there in the 1st inning. Fastball command struggled there in the 3rd and 4th. But you could see it. You could see the talent. You saw the upper 90s fastball. You saw how, when commanded properly, those breaking balls are terrific. And his changeup has really been the pitch that has unlocked this door to the big leagues for Daniel Lynch. So, look, I think it's perfectly said by him after the game. I'm not going to be picky for my big league debut. I need a little bit more. Before I make any sort of judgments on the young man, but what I saw last night was a good first step.
It certainly was a good first step. So we had on Brian Polberg, who is the AAA manager for the Omaha Storm Chasers, and sort of asked him his thoughts, his opinion, his evaluation of Daniel Lynch. He thinks he can be a front end of the rotation guy. Do you agree? Are we talking about an ace? We talking about a one? Whenever people say front end of the rotation guy, what do you think they mean with Lynch?
Yeah, number one, number two on a championship team, no doubt. Cole Hamels-like, that's the name that he's quick to bring up. That's the guy that he emulated early on in his career. Cole Hamels was a World Series MVP, was at least a preseason Cy Young dark horse favorite for a solid 5 to 6 seasons, his time with the Philadelphia Phillies. So, when you're 6'6 coming from the left side and you can touch triple digits, as long as you can command it, you're going to be someone that the manager is going to hand you the ball and say, give me 7 innings. I think Daniel Lynch can do it. The only issue is when you're that big, when you have that many moving parts, can you repeat your delivery? Can you adjust back to the league when they first catch up to your arsenal? Those things only time will tell.
So I'm sitting here looking at Cole Hage and sort of what he accomplished in his career. 4-time All-Star, won a World Series in 2008, was the MVP of the World Series in 08, also the NLCS MVP, and also has a no-hitter in his career. I don't know what I need to do, but if you're telling me I could press a button right now and lock in Daniel Lynch to be Cole Hamels,
all day,
I will absolutely sign up for him to be that.
Yeah, all day. No, that's ceiling. That's, why this guy was the top ranked pitching prospect in the organization. But 5 years ago, we're saying Adalberto Mondesi has the talent to be Francisco Lindor. He hasn't, I don't even want to say hasn't lived up to that billing, just hasn't played enough to even come close to living up to that billing. So same thing could happen with Daniel Lynch, but as far as projecting his talent and his size, Cole Hamels is the guy.
Vern, when do you think we start to worry about Hunter Dozier? So because we're at the 100 at bat mark for Hunter Dozier, I think he's been their worst consistent everyday offensive player. When do you think that worry starts? 150 at bats, 200 at bats? When do you think that worry starts?
I can't give you a definitive number. I would say when Hunter Dozier's not making solid contact, he's punching out on a consistent basis. I've seen a lot of bad luck early on. I've seen a lack of confidence at times early on. So to give you a date and look, if he's still doing poorly by then, I'm going to panic. I don't know. I need to see the evidence. I need to watch the games. I need to see what kind of swings he's putting on balls. I need to see how he's carrying himself on the field, in the dugout, around his teammates. Currently, not concerned about Hunter Dozier all that much.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll do hashtag Hey Vern. If you got a question, now's the time to start putting it into the text line, 913-576-7610. Vern, when I saw the Adalberto Mondesi news, I thought that that spelled bad for Adalberto Mondesi. I thought it meant that maybe he wasn't going to be up in May and it was going to take until maybe June, end of June. Am I kind of overthinking it, or are these two moves unrelated?
You mean the Escobar?
Yeah.
Alcides Escobar?
Yeah, just looking at Alcides Escobar, looking at his position, looking at his durability. When I saw that, I thought it meant that Mondesi wasn't going to be here for a while.
No, I mean, as far as what we heard from Dayton Moore yesterday, we're still hopeful that Adalberto Mondesi will be able to start a rehab assignment a week from today, if not, not this weekend, but next weekend when the team's out on the road. You know, that's the optimistic view. Now, the Alcides Escobar signing to me is just organizational depth. You saw Nicky Lopez run into the umpire, have a little scare in that game last night. You couple that with the fact that one of their minor league shortstops, their AAA shortstop, Lucius Fox, dealing with a little bit of a hamstring. Next to pitcher and catcher, you can never have enough shortstops, but you certainly can have too few shortstops. So to me, it's just organizational depth. Esky's a quality clubhouse guy. Obviously, he's desperate to get back into the game. So, sure, you can have a few ABs in Omaha for the time being.
Vern, it is time for our new segment called hashtag Hey Vern. Text line 913-576-7610. If you got a question for our Royals insider, now is the time to do it. Hey, Vern, when did Keller need a mechanic change? That seems to be new this year.
Yeah, I don't really buy that he needs a mechanic change. I understand not wanting to openly discuss negative thoughts, even though over the past few weeks when he's on with Bob and Josh, he's been very open and upfront about fighting off the negative thoughts, fighting off the lack of confidence. To me, Brad Keller's issues are 90% upstairs. To me, the first two starts of the season, it was a case of a young man with real pressure on him for the first time in his professional career, playing for a team that has heightened expectations for the first time in his career. Everyone that's around him in the organization, everyone that covers him in the media, has called him the horse. Oh, this is a guy that's going to eat up 180-plus innings. And to me, with every pitch that he made in those first two starts, he was trying to put up 180 innings, a la Mike Moustakas in 2014, where you keep looking up and you understand the expectations of this team. You understand you're letting this team down, so you're trying to hit five-run home runs, and you end up grounding out or popping out in foul territory to the third baseman every single time. Brad Keller early on was trying to put together a monster season with every single pitch. Lately, what I'm seeing is a guy following the multiple errors of Whit Merrifield three starts ago that ultimately sank his start. And then we see Hunter Dozier make a miscue behind him in his most recent start. To me, when you have those negative thoughts in your head, they end up manifesting themselves on the field in this game. You know, if you're thinking, all right, here comes the pitch, can't give up a three-run home run, you're more than certainly going to give up a three-run home run. Brad Keller's trying to not make a mistake. He's thinking way too much out there. He's trying to right the wrongs of those first five starts with every single pitch, and that just never works. Maybe that's somewhat similar to what we're seeing with Hunter Dozier. We remember Mike Moustakas when that team went to the postseason and those stats on Crown Vision were wiped away and everybody was hitting zero. No one had a stat to start the postseason. Mike Moustakas could hit some sort of a reset. Well, Hunter Dozier, Brad Keller, they don't get that luxury, at least not for another 5 months. So they need to find somehow to hit their own reset button, find some confidence, go out there and contribute to team wins, and slowly but surely those numbers will turn around.
We are doing hashtag Hey Vern, a new segment we'll do every Tuesday, which gives you guys the question to ask Vern, your Royals question. Hashtag Hey Vern, do you believe the Royals' lack of quality starting pitching will ultimately cost them the division?
I think that was the concern coming into the season. I think we all believed that the defense would be strong once again. I thought the bullpen would be the strength of the team. I think we thought base running wise, they'd be solid. Offense would be improved. The question was, Brad Keller serving as the number one of this rotation. Again, Brad Keller, a lot of these guys, honestly. Brad Keller, Jacob Junis, Danny Duffy. It's been a while since there's been real pressure on them, real expectations. And you know, Keller, obviously not good to get started. Danny Duffy has exceeded anyone's expectations. I don't believe that he's going to have a sub-1 ERA over the course of the season, but I also believe that Daniel Lynch is going to improve. I think that Brad Keller is going to improve moving forward. If there is something that brings this team down, yeah, I think it will be pitching. Is it starting pitching? Is it the bullpen? We'll find out, because the loss of Kyle Zimmer to me is huge. Kyle Zimmer was with Josh Staumont and Scott Barlow as three guys that Mike Matheny could turn to for multiple innings on consecutive days. And these guys were putting up zeros consistently. Losing a guy like that, sure, they're replacing him with Jacob Junis, and I think Junis can fill that role well moving forward. But Kyle Zimmer's been filling that role well for the past year and a half. So even though the bullpen started off the season as the strength, I think there are a lot of question marks right now with that bullpen. Bottom line, yes, pitching will be the reason why this team falls short of the postseason. Pitching doesn't necessarily have to be the reason why anyone calls this season a disappointment. Let's recalibrate, realize we're 1/6 of the way through this 162-game march. A lot of baseball to go, and this team is already well ahead of expectations. I think a natural regression was expected.
We're playing Hey Vern. We'll do this every Tuesday in the 3 o'clock hour just to get Vern's thoughts on what you guys want to ask him about the Royals. Hashtag Hey Vern. Why did they demote Jacob Junis to the pen and not Keller?
Because, as I mentioned, Kyle Zimmer gone. Kyle Zimmer was your third best reliever behind Staumont and Barlow. Moving Brad Keller to the bullpen doesn't make the bullpen any better. We've seen Jacob Junis thrive out of the bullpen at the tail end of last year. Because even last year, it was just fastball slider with Jacob Junis. He develops a cutter this offseason. That's going to make him quite the dangerous weapon. He can become that third best or fourth best behind Jake Brents, third or fourth best bullpen reliever. Moving Jacob Junis to the bullpen helps elevate that pen back to being a net positive. You move Brad Keller to the bullpen, and I don't believe that Brad Keller's a guy that you're going to put in a critical situation in the sixth or seventh inning for a number of reasons. Hasn't pitched out of the bullpen since his rookie season. And number two, the issue right now with Brad Keller is confidence. So I don't know if I'm trying to throw him in a tie game in the seventh inning and say, hey, man, keep us in this. Jacob Junis to the bullpen makes your pitching staff better. Brad Keller, it is a must. Brad Keller has to be a starter, has to be a quality starter, or else this team is going to probably have a difficult time reaching that 75 win plateau. So the team is better with Jacob Junis in the bullpen and Brad Keller in the rotation as far as I see it.
Hashtag Hey Vern. Hey Vern, with the way you're sounding, it sounds like Kyle Zimmer is just flat out gone, like not coming back. When do you expect him to be back? What's a reasonable timetable for Kyle Zimmer's return?
Yeah, we actually had a chance to talk with Mike Matheny about just that earlier today, and it doesn't sound serious as far as a season-ending injury, but that's what managers do, right? Managers always try to downplay pitching injuries. How did he phrase it? Left trap, I believe. Left trap strain. So at least it's not the throwing arm, but once he gets a full range of motion, is what Mike Matheny said. Once he gets full range of motion, he'll start throwing once again. So I'm not nervous as far as Kyle Zimmer being lost for the season. I'm not worried about Kyle Zimmer being lost for anywhere longer than another 2-3 weeks.
You're the only person here at the station that I don't really mind when you drop names, because every time we talk baseball with Cody, he will always talk to us about how he texted JJ Piccolo. Like, he will make it a point. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. If we could be talking to him about who does he pick for in the hot dog derby between mustard, ketchup, and relish, he'd be like, well, I texted JJ Piccolo. He's a big relish guy. That ain't got nothing to do with the story we were just talking about.
It's a nice flex, though. JJ's a pretty cool dude.
No, he always is going to do that. Everybody on the, I would say right now, the text line line is a combination between what's wrong with Brad Keller, what do you make of Alcides Escobar, and Bobby Witt Jr. How many days a week do you get asked about Bobby Witt Jr.?
Not as often as you think, but that's also because I have hundreds of people muted on Twitter.
That's
but as far as Bobby Witt Jr., man, I would expect not a fast track, but look, if the team keeps winning, Bobby Witt Jr. is a major reinforcement. So, sure, Mondesi's on his way back, but if they keep winning, if they remain atop this American League Central, there's just no way, if he produces at a consistent basis and remains healthy, there's just no way Bobby Witt Jr. isn't in the big leagues before September.
Last question here. Hey, Vern, what's your Chipotle order?
Nah, this isn't going to go well. Chipotle's trash. I'm not a Chipotle guy. My wife is obsessed with it. She'll get it 3 or 4 times a week. That's not me. But if I am, I mean, I have an order. Everybody has an order. I just begrudgingly make it. It's a, I can go bowl or burrito with brown rice. Give me that chicken. Give me those peppers. Let me get that black bean, some cheese, maybe a little bit of guac on that bad boy. Get some corn, and I'm straight.
I called one of Rob's Chiefs opinions yesterday trash, and he didn't have the look on the face like he had when you just said that Chipotle was trash.
That's fine. You know what drives me crazy is how much food they jam into these burritos, and then just watching that person fold it over and try to squeeze all this disgust. No. It's just too, you don't need to be eating that much. It's like 2 servings. It's enough.
I actually feel like they don't give you enough meat in there. Like they are
okay,
always
yeah, but chill
stingy.
Out on the rice.
Oh, I mean, I actually want more rice to compensate for the fact that they gave me 7 pieces of chicken.
Should the tortilla be as stretchy as it is? Shouldn't it burst with that much food in it? I don't trust
See,
it.
I stopped getting the Chipotle burrito for that same reason. Like, I didn't like picking it up, and then it would just, like, it would just fold in your hand. It was terrible. I couldn't get it.
Yeah, you go I tacos or bowl. That's the ideal way to go.
That is our guy.
I'm not as down on the queso as everybody else, so there's another bad take by me.
The queso was one of those things that I was willing to try early, but none of the reviews were very high on the Chipotle queso. So I just made my mind up that I don't have any interest in ever trying it. Like, it might be amazing right now.
It's okay. It's
like,
okay.
Like, first impression was not strong with me with the queso. So I'm out. I have no interest in it.
It's not bad, but if she's going, you might as well pick me up something. Grab me some chips and queso.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier. Every Tuesday at 3:30, we will do a new segment called Hashtag #AVern. Will you get a chance to ask him your Royals question? And we'll get more of his food opinions. Thanks, Vern.
All right, man.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. So that was a Vern question. And we'll get back to the Chiefs coming up in a little bit. But I want to ask you guys a question. And maybe this is sacrilegious on the day that I'm asking the question, but it's important. So I am not a Star Wars person. I tried to watch the first Star Wars when I was in high school. There wasn't enough action for me. I don't know if it's because I had played the Star Wars video games that I was expecting just lightsabers. And I mean, I was expecting a little bit more oomph than what I saw. I turned it off and I've never gone back to see it. So I'm not here telling you I'm anti-Star Wars. I'm just not pro-Star Wars. So we were trying to figure out as a show today how to celebrate a day that obviously means a lot to you guys. May the 4th be with you. I get it. It's the most popular movie franchise of all time. But I determined a long time ago I don't got to be in on everything. Some of you love Lost. I've never seen Lost before. We all can have different interests. I asked Rob to describe Star Wars in one sentence to somebody who had never seen it before. And it sounded like the most unappealing movie I'd ever seen. And then he was like, well, what about a movie that you like? He was like, well, do Friday. Well, I'm like, Friday's very easy. 2 stoner friends try to come up with $200 to pay off a drug dealer. That's the core of, that's a movie you'd be interested in watching. Rob, can you tell them, so when I asked you earlier today, give me one sentence to describe the plot of Star Wars to somebody who hadn't seen it. And I want you to really hear this and tell me if this sounds like a movie that you would want to see.
I got you. Here we go. And this is the OG Star Wars. I'm not doing a sentence for the whole 9 movies. Just for the record, text line, I know how you're going to be.
Yes. So I'm saying A New Hope, 1977. How would you describe the plot of Star Wars?
In the midst of an intergalactic war, a group of rebels sets out to destroy a planet-killing device to keep the Empire from overtaking the universe. Fire.
Text line 913.
Text line's in.
Text line 913-576-7610. Is that a movie that you're interested in watching? Obviously, it's probably a lot more than that. It's hard to describe a 2.5 hour long movie in one sentence and really boil it down. Does that sound like a movie that's appealing to you guys? Does that sound like a movie that you want to go see? That sounds awful to me. That sounds like a movie I have no interest in going to see. Text line, trash. Exactly. That movie sounds terrible. Absolutely terrible. Again, I'm not here hating. The text line saying that I'm hating on Star Wars. I'm not hating on it. I've never seen it to hate on it. I've seen 1 hour of the Star Wars universe. 1 hour. It wasn't for me. Maybe I should have gave it some more time, but I'm also not a sci-fi movie buff. Somebody says, why couldn't I just watch Men in Black? Exactly. I bet you if I came up with one sentence to describe Men in Black, like, I bet you right now, if I read you the IMDb for Men in Black and then you read the Star Wars one, I bet you that the Men in Black movie sounds better.
I'll pull up the Star Wars one.
All right. Hold on. You do this. Pick a random Star Wars movie, and then I'll pick Men in Black. And then we'll read the description for the two movies, and then tell me what movie sounds better.
I'll pick my favorite Star Wars. That's what I'll do.
Okay. So Men in Black, a police officer joins a secret organization that polices and monitors extraterrestrial interactions on Earth. All right, that's the Men in Black. A police officer joins a secret organization that polices and monitors extraterrestrial interactions on Earth. I'm like, I want to know more about this secret organization. There's extraterrestrial interactions on Earth? That sounds interesting. All right, let's read your one sentence and tell me what movie sounds better.
The daughter of an imperial scientist joins the Rebel Alliance in a risky move to steal the plans of the Death Star. Yep, people are in.
I'm not going to lie. I heard Death Star. Now I want to learn more about what the Death Star is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the Death Star is,
exactly.
But that has me intrigued.
You know what aliens are. You don't know what the Death Star is. You don't know nothing about it.
What's the Death Star? I don't know what the Death Star is. Someone on the text line said, Rob just said a lot of words to describe it, and honestly, I'm lost. You understand it. He then asked me, Rob makes fun of me because, and I'm not even ashamed to admit this, Four Brothers is one of my 10 favorite movies. I'm not saying it's one of the 10 best movies I've ever seen. I love the movie Four Brothers. Just absolutely love it. I don't know what it is about it. I love all the characters. I love the plot. I could quote it. When I gave him the description of Four Brothers, you would have thought I described Goodfellas to him. Rob was just on the edge of his seat. Couldn't wait to go see that movie. I'm like, yeah, that's Four Brothers. Movie you make fun of all the time. Text line. I do want to play this. 913-576-7610. Give me one word sentence to describe Star Wars to somebody who's never seen it. Who's never seen it. Someone said, how much would I have to pay you to watch all of the Star Wars back to back to back? Probably 50 a movie. 50 a movie, I'd do it.
50 a movie?
Yeah, 50. 50 a movie, and I would need the popcorn and all the snacks taken care of.
50 plus the cinematic experience, or 50 and you're just at home? Because they're streaming. We got Disney Plus.
Yeah, I'll never go on Disney Plus and watch those movies. I understand it's a selling point for those of you that watch it, but I've never had any interest in watching Star Wars.
You nearly need $500 to watch 9 films.
Yeah, probably so. probably so. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. I still think there's a couple of issues with the roster. I'll explain. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.